Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Creep Dive.
This is the Creep Dive. This is Tuesday. Our live shows are booked in and we're raring to go. If you've got tickets, we can't wait to see you.
Yeah. It's going to be class. Halloween is Christmas.
It is our Creepmas.
I'm buzzing for them, actually. I'm coming back up from Cork on the Monday at 4 o'clock.
And?
Heading straight to the Bernard Shaw.
For the ghosts and ghouls. It's going to be great.
I can't wait.
I'm having great fun with my research.
Good.
I know. And it's hard to know kind of what way to play it.
There's one way and it is minimal deaths.
Really?
I think live shows are all about...
Bit of crack.
Bit of joy.
Some people love the gore.
It's awkward for some reason sitting in a room with like 120 people and just... bringing everyone down. That feeling where you're like,
so special.
I have ruined this everyone's night. And being able to see the whites of their eyes while you're wrecking their day
is
different.
It's like when I insist on putting on Joni Mitchell, The River, at the end of a night.
Well, I had a river I could skate away on.
God, it's music to my ears. This week, I was thinking to myself, as I continuously watch bears with tapeworms coming out their ears, what parasite would I like to be?
Oh, good question.
If I was a parasite. Now, I'm ahead of you two because I've been researching parasites.
Yes.
And there's some we've covered and some we haven't. Off the top of your head there, guys.
Yeah.
What do you think for yourselves?
I'd take the ant possessor.
The fungus.
Yes.
Oh, yes. I do
love
enjoy that one.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And I'd make the ant host do my bidding.
I love that.
Which would probably just be working together with the other ant community to carry larger things across distances.
To
did you ever
feed
see
on.
Ants do that?
Carry enormous weights on their backs.
Yeah.
They are so team focused.
Yeah.
They are truly. Them and the bees.
They would nail.
They really work well together.
A very successful community.
Yeah.
No, and a clear leader in both. The queen. And nobody fucks with her. She's got one job.
To
get inseminated.
Fat and sassy.
Pump out the eggs. Get fed through the mouth. And get looked after.
Stunning.
I could do that.
I don't know about all that Okay, Cass, any parasites come to mind for you?
I would like to be one that lives in water during the day and then goes in the mouth and lives in the gut and then comes back out and goes back into the water stream.
I'll give you one of them. Hmm. I'll give you the name. Let's start with the parasite I would most like to be. And it's the tongue-eating type.
Okay.
This is a really...
Tongue is a delicacy.
Interesting. I'm going to try and pronounce my name. Chiamothia exigua. And I am an isopod. I start off my life as a male, but I can switch to whatever sex I like at any time after that point.
Keep it spicy.
Keep isopod. It spicy.
What's an isopod?
It's, you know, like a woodlouse.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Shelled creature, many legs.
Love it.
So this, I enter my host fish tiny, when I'm tiny, through the gills.
Oh, crafty.
No one ever expects the gills. And I set up camp there and I begin to mature. I decide I'm going to become female, and so I do, as I am a hermaphrodite. And I exit the gills and secure myself to the tongue of the fish.
Oh, God.
And here's where I really get down to business. So I'm piercing the tongue and I begin blood sucking from the source. Mm. And that's my nutrition. And I gradually increase in size. As I envelop the entire tongue.
And is the fish just going about its day?
The fish is going about its day.
Wow.
I don't drain enough to kill the fish. I just...
Are you a bit of an irritant to the fish?
Yes,
or do the fish not
say,
notice?
A fish not having hands can do nothing about it. It'd be like having something in your teeth without hands.
Like if you're a T-Rex and you just had a bit of gristle in your tooth.
There's nothing you can
imagining.
Do.
Imagining. Could the fish help each other?
They're
don't
think so.
They're not teamwork focused.
Correct. So loser.
Silly.
Self-minded bastards.
Except in Finding Nemo.
Except that.
They work together.
So I don't kill the fish, obviously. Draining away the tongue until it eventually wastes away, leaving me in its place. Ha! I am a pseudo tongue.
Beautiful.
Fish alive and kicking. Eating food, doing what it can to masticate it in its mouth, as I am there in the host of a tongue. Fish food going past the roof of me and getting sucked into the bottom. So you think, like, I'll just enjoy myself there and everything will be fine until a male appears, crawling up from the gills of the fish I am living in.
It's mating season.
It's going to mate with me.
Oh, fabulous.
Inside the mouth of the fish. And can I say, I'm quite enormous at this time. I am poking out of the fish's mouth. I'm that big.
Oh, wow.
And I will release my babies. And so continues the cycle of me. Do you want a little picture of the fish?
I'm literally Googling fish mouth parasite.
See how big I am?
It's so cute.
Living in there, my little host.
Oh, look at you.
A horror.
You're adorable.
I know. And then I was like, there's loads of different... And we never really... I thought we'd just kind of... With
oh, look at you.
Parasites in mind, do a little bit on the guinea worm.
Look at this one with your little beady eyes.
I'm looking directly out. Like, yes. I'm driving my car, which is
so,
the fish.
It's so cute.
It's really amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
But so disturbing. So have we heard of the guinea worm? Of course we all have. And it's really dreadful because of the horrendous pain it causes, and it comes out in such a dreadful manner.
I love this article. Before you move on, there's an article here called "Why No Fish Wants a Tongue-Eating Parasitic Louse in Its Mouth." It's like,
obviously.
I mean, you've answered your own question in that statement. Okay, sorry, go on.
Okay, we're back in Wormland, and let's say I'm a guinea worm on this occasion.
Okay.
I'm starting out very, very, very small. So microscopically small that I am ingested by a water flea.
Wow.
Then the real journey begins for me, because I exist in pools of water that might be thirst quenching to a human.
Uh-oh.
Happily floating there, I see an empty cup come from above.
Uh-oh, no.
And I slink into the glass of water. And in the body of my host, a human, I am still within the flea. Sorry, at this point, the flea dissolves in the stomach acid of the human. I am released for journey to begin. I begin to burrow my way through the intestinal wall with ease. I will begin then to mature in the body.
Oh, I'm looking at your life cycle here.
I could get to an incredible 80 centimetres in length.
Jesus. Guys.
Unbelievable.
You're amazing.
At this point, I am. There's others with me. There's male and females. And I will worm myself around the body and locate a mate. And I will, at one point, if I am lucky enough to find a mate, carry 3 million embryos.
Oh my God.
The male will shrivel up and die because that's all they're good for. And I will begin to slither through the subcutaneous tissues of my host, each slither causing immense pain.
Oh God.
And my final resting point is in fact the foot of my poor, poor host.
Tassler.
Here, I pierce the skin, erupting in a painful blister for the host.
Oh.
It burns so bad that my human host will throw their foot into water to try to ease the pain, but that's exactly what I want.
Oh no.
I begin to wriggle and poke my head out.
Oh.
And I hear you saying, what about your embryos, Jen? There's 3 million of them inside you.
Oh fuck.
Don't worry, I've got a plan. I begin to retch and vomit my embryos out of my mouth into the water.
Oh God.
So that the life cycle can in fact continue.
Oh God.
And someone else can chow down unsuspectingly on the fleas that eat me and the journey continues. But that's when I must go to my body. I'm still alive. I'm halfway out of foot. My poor host is in severe pain, but they must not do the thing that could cause them almost a deadly reaction, an immune reaction, which is break me in half.
Oh God.
So you can't pull.
Instead,
so they have to coexist with you.
They must slowly but surely wrap me around a pencil or a stick.
Ah, yes.
Inching ever gently out and out, excruciating pain.
Oh, good God.
It is very, very bad. And that is another option for you if you wish to become a parasite.
And like, how do they know when you're all out?
Well, slowly my tail will just come out and that'll be the end. But you want to be very sure you don't break me in half.
Oh my God, this Google image search is one of the best things I've seen in a long time.
Do we have time for one little more?
Oh God, yes.
So let's talk about the parasitoid wasps.
It's making me feel uneasy, but I like it.
Are you ready? The majority of wasp species, apparently, are parasitoids. So that means they steal the body of another organism, use it as a nursery for their young, and eat through the host while it's still alive.
Jesus, I didn't know that.
There you are. You know about the fig, obviously.
No.
All figs have a wasp inside them.
What?
That's right.
All figs.
That's how they pollinate.
What?
So a fig.
What happens to me now? You've got it.
You just ingest the dead body of the wasp and that's the end of it.
No.
Look it
but
up.
Like, I've never noticed a wasp inside any figs when I'm cutting them up.
To be fierce, small, you see. These are tiny, weeny things.
Oh my God.
So,
fig wasp.
Let's have a little talk about this disgusting example of a parasite. Let's try to pronounce this. Glypadipeda tells wasps. So, this members of this genus lay up to 80 eggs into live caterpillars. And they hatch, eat the caterpillar alive, eat their way through the caterpillar skin, attach themselves to nearby foliage and form a cocoon. But then there's a twist because the caterpillar turns bodyguard and it ignores the daily leaf chomping duties and stands guard over the pupae that of the wasp that exited its body. Isn't that amazing,
That's
guys?
That's so bizarre.
So it violently swings its head around, knocking predators away. And the caterpillars, turned faithful guardians, allow the wasps and their cocoons to grow up and hatch. Isn't that fucking amazing?
Yeah.
So the emerald cockroach wasp, or it's also called a jewel wasp, also turns its host into a zombie by injecting venom directly into its brain with a powerful sting aimed at its head. It then drags around the confused and worried cockroach.
Oh, fuck.
And it drags it into a chamber, lays its eggs on it. The larvae eventually hatch, bore into the host, eating its insides while it's still alive, gobbling its organs until the cockroach dies. And that's just a part of that.
Oh my God.
Oh, there's so many more parasites out there. Are you still really upset
about this fig thing?
Yeah, that's...
Oh, sorry. Did you look it up there? Get the juice on that. It's very interesting.
There's a Natural History Museum video explaining, but I just want him to tell me it's okay to continue eating them.
Of course it is.
But like, okay.
There's bugs in everything. I was on my, doing my magic mushroom picking. Now's the time, guys. Get out.
Okay, wait.
Just get me some.
It's okay. I just got to the end of the video and there's somebody categorically stating, don't worry, there's no dead wasps in your fig.
Well, liar.
So there's some way that...
The wasps exit.
Yeah. Or maybe that's just big fig propaganda. I don't know. Fucking hell.
Just a quick one for people are concerned on my threads about eating tiny maggots off their magic mushrooms. And I have to say, get a life. No? I think that's lame. Your journey to enlightenment.
And if you just take the maggot off, surely it's fine then.
Do you not wash them?
No, you just dry them up. People say the maggots, as you're drying them on the radiator, will just exit the... They'll be like, this is too warm and they need the moisture. I don't like this climate, I'm leaving. And they'll make their way down your radiator.
Your home.
Into your carpets. And so the cycle continues. The magic mushroom larvae has reached its host. Maybe in fact really the magic element is the maggots.
Ooh.
They contain the psilocybin we all chase.
Isn't there is a maggot that you can eat and it gives you hallucinations, isn't
magical
there?
Powers. Maybe maggot. Just as you're being poisoned, you get a flash of it.
Hallucination. Although actually, I mean, it's probably more likely that I'm thinking of people having hallucinations of maggots while on mushrooms.
Yes, that sounds more likely. Yeah. Sophie, what have you got for us? Some meaty business.
I've got some meaty business and I feel kind of self-conscious because the last episode on the main was also me delivering quite an extensive creep.
That's what we're here for.
But sure, look.
Yeah, it's Sophie and we're out of stores.
Okay, here we go.
I've eaten your tongue.
Yeah.
Go.
I feel your presence in here.
In your mouth.
Just a little adorable Jen.
Pressed up against your teeth.
Out. It's the peering out of the mouth is so cute.
It's my proximity to teeth and where I really want to live. It's my dentine fetish.
Of course. Okay. Have you ever heard of the ogre of Aptos?
Oh no.
Or what about, have you heard of the mad titan?
Never.
Have you heard of Big Ed?
Is this the same guy?
What? Yeah.
Never.
I have.
Have you?
Have you heard of the co-ed killer?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, sounds familiar.
I never knew that he had all these other names. It's Ed Kemper.
Oh.
Now, Ed Kemper was a special guest on the pod during pandemic.
Yes. How could we forget?
If anyone remembers, Seb Kemper appeared and I interviewed Ed Kemper.
That was amazing.
And
did he show his face or did we you had him like the camera?
Well, you see, Ed Kemper was 6'9".
So we were only looking at the shoulders.
You only could up to like the nipples basically. And so, because Ed Kemper is full of sound bites, shall we say. So there's so much interview footage of this guy. Never shut up after he was convicted and imprisoned. And so much so that he actually went on to narrate audiobooks.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. Isn't that mad? And so I think I had gathered up lots of Ed Kemper quotes for that interview. That was how that went. But we never like fully like did the story of Ed Kemper.
I'm ready.
In that episode or anything like that. Okay. So... Ed Kemper. He murdered 8 people.
That's a lot.
It's quite a few.
It's pretty bad, actually.
3 of them were members of his family.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Which and three would you kill? You only have three.
There's none left in mine. They're already dead.
Yeah, I'm short on people as well. I mean,
you have a spare.
I have a spare.
If you're going to kill three, the kids.
Oh, oh Jesus.
Keep Seb.
Keep Seb, is it? No way. Seb wouldn't. No, no. Seb and my mum got to go, I suppose.
Which members of his family? Did okay. he have many to spare?
He had a few to spare. Okay, so let me tell you a bit about Seb, I was about to say. Edmund Emil Kemper III. So he was born in 1948. December birthday. What's that? Sagittarius?
What date in December?
18th of December.
Yeah, he's a Sag like myself. Very sensitive souls.
Sensitive souls.
Very independent.
He's giving Capricorn, I will say, because they are the most annoying of the zodiac.
Do you think?
All Capricorns listening, you know it's true.
Self-aware and annoying.
I think they're also very organized. Now, I don't know how organized Ed was, actually, to be honest. He was a bit chaotic. Okay, so he was the middle of three children. He had an older sister and a younger sister. And his dad was Edmund Emil Kemper Jr., a.k.a. the second, I presume. And he was a World War II veteran. And then after the war, he worked testing nuclear weapons, whoa, funny enough, and then worked as an electrician. And he hardly gets a fucking look in this story. Because as usual...
Left.
It's... Well, left, exactly. And it's the mother who is... largely blamed.
Of okay.
Clarnell is her name, which is, I would say, an unusual one. I don't know how many Clarnells.
How would you shorten that?
Clarnell. Elizabeth Kemper. And, okay,
Nell.
So...
Nell.
Mm.
They had a very fractious marriage.
The hell is Nell another way to... When you're called Nell.
Nell. Nelly.
Chanel.
Penelope. Chanel. Lanyard. Do you remember Hamish? That was another pandemic one.
So we've got to get the laughs out because so much horror is coming.
So much horror is coming. So Ed Jr., dad, Ed,
yeah,
fucking hated Clarnell. You wonder how these people get together and then have three kids. But seemingly hated Clarnell. And anyone who's ever like examined the story has like retroactively decided that she had borderline personality disorder,
okay,
which is not how you make accurate mental health diagnoses.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I'm so deeply in defense of Clarnell, except that I just feel like you can't always blame the mom.
No.
Even though she definitely had some very, very dubious parenting styles. She also, I've seen it in some places say that she was an alcoholic.
Okay.
But I haven't seen it everywhere. So who knows? Maybe just like an alcoholic by American standards. They're a different type of alcoholic to Irish alcoholics.
Oh, yeah.
That's in what in
they consume a regular amount of alcohol or what we would consider a regular amount of alcohol.
I see. Well, yeah, it's not actually that they're different alcoholics. It's just that the social mores are so different higher. That they are treated. They're treated as alcoholics sooner than Irish people are treated as alcoholics. So actually, maybe it's working out better for them. Okay, so anyway, later, Ed the dad, Ed Jr., said of his marriage that, quote, suicide missions in wartime and the atomic bomb testings were nothing compared to living with Clarnell.
Oh, ooh, my God.
And that she did him more damage than more than 396 days and nights of fighting on the front did.
In the name of God.
So
what did Clarnell do?
A harsh indictment.
Or is he just trying to pass the book? Presumably this all came out after.
I don't know. I don't want to like, I wasn't there.
Fine.
You never know what's going on inside another person's family. And we know some of what Clarnell did, all right. But like, to be honest... It's Clarnell feels very chicken and egg stuff.
An atomic bomb
with her treatment of Ed. Mm-hmm. We'll get into it. Okay. Ed, when he was born, he weighed, and bearing in mind, he went on to be 6'9".
Wow.
And I don't know. I mean, a hefty enough weight because you're 6'9". I mean,
his poor
300 pounds or something.
Imagine that coming after you.
I mean, terrifying. Mm-hmm. But like, he actually had a kind of, like, he just looked, he had a real regular guy face.
Yeah,
atop like handsome. Atop this body. Mm. So when he was born, he weighed 13 pounds.
Holy shit. Oh, wow.
Which is more than two of my babies put together weighed.
No way.
Yeah. Like,
that is a hefty baby.
Yeah, that's big.
I mean, that's ginormous. Like, I would say, what do you think an average baby weight is?
Seven or eight
pounds, maybe. Yeah. Huge. Like, poor Clarnell.
Where did
she went on to have another kid after that. He was the middle child.
Okay. Someone probably fell out.
Oh, yeah.
God, yeah. So anyway, like, by the time he was four, he was already towering above all the other kids in his class. And from a very early age, was exhibiting signs of
psychopathy.
Yes. The usuals, cruelty to animals. Sorry, Cass, you're going to hate this. Mm. When he was 10, he buried the family cat alive.
Very hard to do that. I mean, it's literally cat in the bag stuff.
Like, cats will fucking fight you.
Yeah.
So
maybe he stunned it, though.
Oh. Anyway.
What age was he?
Ten. That wasn't even enough for him. He then dug it back up and then decapitated the cat.
Oh, my God.
And then mounted the cat's head on a spike.
And did what then? Terrorized the other cats in the neighborhood.
I think he had the cat spike head in his wardrobe.
Huh.
And the rest of the wardrobe was kind of littered with bits and bobs of the cat.
Like a Punch and Judy kind of show?
And I mean, I think his intention was to, well, A, satisfy his
morbid curiosity,
pleasure from the killing, and then to terrorize his sisters and his mother. And he said that he got a lot of pleasure from lying to the family about the cat. Like, where was the cat? Has anyone seen the cat? And Ed was fucking, had a boner from pretending he knew nothing about the cat.
I think he was like,
very disturbing.
Going underneath his sister's windowsills outside.
Just bobbing the cat head along. Oh, God.
Potentially.
Pretending the cat was going down in a lift. Pretending the cat was in a canoe. Oh. We all know.
The stairs
is classic.
The number one did it this morning to my own child.
As she stared at me for longing through the way. Get me out of here, Jen. Mom.
Jen.
O-D-W-Y-E-R. As I fake stepped out of it, did like a jolly laugh. Her tear-streaked face watching me.
Oh, God.
Bit of Kemper in a soul.
Looking forward to seeing what she does to those cats of yours in a couple of years' time. At the age of 13, he killed another family cat because he thought the cat was favouring his younger sister.
Oh, jealous. Okay.
Over him. And he was jealous. And so then he kept pieces of that cat in his wardrobe until Clarnell found them. And he loved going at the sister's dolls. Pulling their heads off. Said later he loved the very satisfying of pulling a head off a doll. Now, listen.
Putting a head off a doll?
A doll, yeah.
Okay, okay. Like, we'll be worried about that.
Like, we all tortured the Barbies.
Yeah.
And that was par for the course.
Scissoring them away and stuff.
He did have some other interesting childhood games.
Not everybody did
just
that.
Just me.
Yeah.
Did everyone did the Barbie scissors?
Yeah. Of course. Yeah.
I didn't, ironically.
That's ironic.
Ironically. Well, you knew even then that it was a complete
waste of time.
Like, unless somebody has like a distended clit that can stimulate another person's clit, it's not going to be, I don't know, like.
Sure, look, look, everyone's making it work.
If you've scissored and said, actually, I will mount a defense of scissoring.
Get it into the old comments.
Which over there are on none. The Patreon.
Over on the Patreon.
Yeah. Okay, so other favorite childhood games, he liked to play gas chamber and electric chair, in which he'd ask his sister to tie him up and ask her to flip an imaginary switch, and then he would writhe around on the floor pretending he was being executed. So
I'm still not overly concerned if I was Clarnell.
I think what Ed was
the
a real
the cats is concerning in storing the parts
storing
of them in the
bits
wardrobes.
Of the cats. The bits of cats.
Accidents can happen.
Oh, Jen. God.
And then him panicking, trying to hide.
I don't know if burying the cat, taking it back up, decapitating it and sticking it on a spike was an accident.
I don't think that was the act of somebody panicking. I think that was somebody reveling.
Enjoying themselves.
Absolutely reveling. Now, are we surprised that his sisters at different times tried to kill him?
No. In real life?
Yes. Well, one, his oldest sister tried to push him in front of a train. And then another time, same sister pushed him into the deep end of a swimming pool.
He'd just be standing up in it.
Fool
me once.
I think what he was a real buzz wreck on the whole house is what we can probably infer.
Yeah, from early like, doors, they were like, this is a mistake. This, he needs to leave.
He's just creeping us out.
Yeah.
He's hurting the pets.
And he's growing enormous. We can't control him.
Yeah. Mm. And so he was very close to his dad. But then Clarnell and Ed divorced. And Ed lived with Clarnell. And apparently they had a very bad relationship. And by all accounts, I think we're talking about Ed's accounts. Oh. Because Clarnell didn't live to tell the tale.
Oh,
and
I
don't know
see.
If the sisters weighed in. They might have and said our mom was terrible to Ed. But also, I kind of can't picture that. I feel a bit like they might be just at that stage a bit fucked off with Ed.
Yeah.
After he killed three members of their family.
And the pets.
And the pets. Yeah, the cat.
Just not.
So I'm not sure who this information came via. But certainly Ed was probably not singing her praises. But said that like she kind of belittled him and would like say really cruel things, and if this is what she said, then it is awful, like, you know, that no woman would ever love him, and he described her as a sick, angry woman, and that she sorry it's kind of funny, just described him as a real weirdo.
She did.
Yes, but it sounds like he was a real weirdo.
Yeah,
at one point he stalked one of his national school teachers with a bayonet.
Oh, like, for God's sake.
Used to go to her house and just like peeping Tom her. But like, why the bayonet, Ed? And where did you get it?
Exactly. Mm.
Like, he was really young. Like, I think that was before he was 13. And so anyway,
he was a torment.
And so he ran away from home at 14. And I'd say they were a bit relieved.
Absolutely.
And he went to his
dad's
house.
He'd be easy to find, though.
Well, he looked like a grown person, I'd say, by then. They were like, just get a job and leave us alone.
Absolutely.
Get an apartment.
Yeah. And so he went and ran away to the dad's house in another part of California. But
was not welcomed with open arms.
Well, imagine, he didn't find this out until he arrived, that the dad had remarried and now had a stepson.
Oh.
Yeah. And so then he stayed with the dad for a while. But then it seems like the new wife was like,
get that freak out of my house.
30-year-old, 14-year-old needs to leave.
Needs to go. And so that was when they sent Ed to live with his grandparents, Dad Ed's parents. So the paternal grandparents, you know, not Clarnell's parents, basically. And they lived in the foothills of the Sierra Nevada, about 2 miles outside of the nearest town. So a little bit kind of away from things, shall we say. And Ed seemingly hated living with his grandparents, so much so that he murdered them both at 15.
Holy shit.
It was August of 1964, and Ed was sitting at the kitchen table with Maud, his granny, and they had an argument. And he said, again, this is a lot of he said. So he's described her as very controlling, and that,
like, Ed, nothing you can say.
Nothing you can say.
Nothing is ever, you're never going to turn and be like, you're right to kill her.
No.
You're like, you know what, Ed, fair.
So after the fact, here's him giving reasons. Exactly. These are all the reasons that she had to be killed.
Exactly, exactly. So he, after their row, stormed off and got the rifle that the grandfather had misguidedly given him for hunting.
Sure, the Americans would be all at that.
I suppose. Sure, give a 15-year-old a rifle. Like, their frontal lobes aren't developed yet, but have at it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he went back to the kitchen. Granny Maud was sitting at the kitchen table working on her children's book.
Aww.
And he shot her in the head.
Where was the granddad?
So granddad wasn't in the house. And he came home. And when he was coming home, Ed went out and shot him out, before he even got into the house.
Okay.
Just like out on the driveway because he just didn't want granddad to find out.
It's just he killed granny, so he killed granddad also.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And so
then he was alone in the gaff.
And then they also believe that there was post-mortem stab wounds done to the granny.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Resist.
Like, what are you at, Ed? It's desperate. Anyway, he was flailing at that point and phoned Clarnell. And Clarnell was like, call the police, Ed.
He confessed to Clarnell?
Yeah.
So,
and what did she do?
He said,
I'm after killing Granny.
I'm after killing them.
And then I killed Granddad.
Yeah.
And Clarnell was like, oh, Jesus.
Call the local police.
Which, okay.
I'm not nearby, Ed. What do you want me to do about it?
Okay, yeah.
Well, you know.
Yeah, but no. Okay.
She clearly, I'd say, was upset.
But also.
I'd say she was disturbed.
It's an irrational answer.
Yeah, yeah. And so he just called the police and waited for them to come and arrest him.
But he was 15.
He was 15.
He was a child, so he's not going to be serving super time.
Yeah. And so when they asked him, like, why did you do this, Ed? He is quoted as saying, just wanted to see what it felt like to kill grandma. And then in the courts, he said, yeah, he just had killed the granddad then just so he wouldn't find out that his wife was dead and be annoyed with Ed for what he'd done. And so court psychiatrists diagnosed him with paranoid schizophrenia.
Okay.
But later he was found to be sane. Okay. I mean, not that paranoid schizophrenia is a marker of insanity, but, you know,
he was 15 at the time.
Because of that diagnosis, he wasn't sent to prison. He was sent to a hospital, maximum security hospital.
Interesting.
And
for how long?
So he was in prison until his 21st birthday. And
when he just ripened, ready for release.
Just ready for release. Had reached the full 6'9" by then, no doubt. Mm. Now, when he was in the mental hospital, what do you call that again? the state hospital for mentally ill convicts.
Yes.
The doctors in the hospital were like, this guy is not paranoid schizophrenic.
Interesting. Okay.
They were like, there's no delusions, there's no hallucinations, no evidence of bizarre thinking. They said that he is has an above average IQ. And so they...
Bit yeah, of got, impulse control issues.
They said bit of a personality... personality trait disturbance is what they called it, which I would say is an understatement.
But they weren't able to reverse the release date. It didn't matter. He'd served his time.
Well, yeah, I mean, this was during his time in the hospital. He, like, made nice with all his psychiatrists and he was a model prisoner and he was trained to administer psychiatric tests to other inmates.
Sorry, what?
Which is very...
What does that mean?
They said, here's a teenager. Why don't we train you up to test other inmates?
They were short-staffed.
It was really, really... They said...
In a white lab coat, your man had passed for anything.
Yeah, probably.
Well, true, yeah.
They were like, we'll just lash
you
in.
He looks like
there.
A middle-aged doctor.
You go review Jimmy Savile.
Yeah.
Do the bits. No one else wants to talk to him.
Yeah.
And he did.
There's reports that he like helped develop some new tests and new scales on the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory. So, I mean, is he doctoring?
I don't know.
Be doctoring.
How was that allowed to be?
They said that he was a very good worker.
Now, hang on they a second. Didn't think he was serving time.
For double murder. Yeah.
He wasn't employed by the hospital, but seemingly he was.
Maybe it was like an internship, you know, and there'd be potential for work at the end of the internship.
You can imagine there years and years gone by, more and more just helping. The more Ed is helping, suddenly he's a member of staff. Yeah. You're like, oh, Ed's on
he's
tonight.
Like, can I get the day off tomorrow?
Ed needs no days off. No, he's not checking out early. He's going nowhere. It's Jimmy Savile running the hospital again.
It's Jimmy running the hospital. They didn't believe him to be a sociopath.
Well, fool me once.
But it definitely seems to be problematic to teach Ed how these tests worked.
Yes.
So that then later he could manipulate later psychiatrists.
He has a very long neck.
He also said...
Oh, that's just long and tall people have that.
I'm long and tall. I don't have a particularly long neck.
I'd say you have a good long neck.
You've got a good long neck, yeah.
All right, okay.
I mean, lovely long. Good. Regal.
Like it's positive.
Yeah.
Like the opposite, the real short neck, that'd be... That wouldn't necessarily be as desirable, you would say.
Do you think rugby players' necks kind of retract over time in order to protect themselves from neck injury?
Could it be sort of an evolutionary thing? Probably. It's those trap muscles. I'm working on mine.
Oh, right. Yeah. Not that the head is retracting. No, it's that the shoulders are rising.
Yeah. Mm.
Gotcha. Okay. So he's out. Happy 21st birthday, Ed. Literally released on his birthday. I can picture all of the hospital staff seeing him off with a little cake and wishing him well.
Picked up by Clarnell?
So he was released into the care of Clarnell.
Uh-oh.
And she had, in the time that he was in prison, she had remarried and then divorced again.
Okay.
Clarnell, kind of unlucky in love. And she had three separate marriages.
Okay.
And she was alone then. Just with the
not now,
massive son.
Ed's here now.
Yeah, massive, massive son.
He's got his doctorate in.
So, a few years after his release, at the age of 24, they said, okay, you're better now, Ed. And we will completely expunge your juvenile records.
I think that's standard issue.
I mean,
I think that is the case with juvenile...
Even murderers?
Yes, I believe so.
Wow.
They just wipe it off their record.
I could be wrong. So depends on the country, I'm sure.
I'm 22 years late for committing
Oh, you have no
a
hope.
Really bad crime.
No, you're absolutely, the gig is up.
the gig's up. Damn it.
Your window has closed.
You guys could complete crime, so, because like life imprisonment for you guys isn't that long.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
It's only been like three and a half
three and a half years.
A few years. And we could also try and claim senility.
True.
In the courts. Okay, so final word from his hospital psychiatrist, or his probation officer psychiatrist, who had been looking at, had kind of been casting the eye over Ed.
Yeah.
For those few years that he was out, but before his 24th birthday. And the doctor said, if I were to see this patient without having any history available or getting any history from him, I would think that we were dealing with a very well-adjusted young man who had initiative, intelligence, and who was free of any psychiatric illnesses. It is my opinion that he has made an excellent response to the years of treatment and rehabilitation, and I would see no psychiatric reason to consider him to be of any danger to himself or to any member of society. And since it may allow him more freedom as an adult to develop his potential, I would consider it reasonable to have the old permanent expunction of his juvenile records. Very good.
Ed won that round.
Mm-hmm. So he was living in Santa Cruz by then with Clarnell, and he attended community college for a bit, and but he was really not getting on with Clarnell at all. I forgot to say one thing about Clarnell now that she did do when he was a kid that wasn't great. Was she used to put him down in the cellar of the house.
Okay.
And the door to the cellar was like underneath the kitchen table.
Oh God. So they'd be dining above him.
So yeah, they could have been having like family dinner up above him, which is not great.
Let's not judge.
Anyway.
But I would lock him away too if he was killing animals.
Well, exactly.
Yeah. And so him and Clarnell were just like fighting endlessly, viciously. But I don't know whether, like, what was the content of these fights? I just don't know. He says it was just always over stupid things.
Like him killing his grandparents. Like, what the fuck are you talking about, Ed?
Ed, like, it's, you need to shut up and put up because you killed your grandparents.
And you've somewhere to live now.
Yeah.
Oh God, you'd really put a foot through his face, wouldn't you?
I would fucking hate to live with someone who had killed my parents-in-law.
These were,
I'd be so fucking scared.
These weren't Clarnell's mum and dad, no, that he killed.
No.
His dad's parents.
It was the in-laws, yeah, her in-laws.
And did he ever speak to his dad again?
Not really. He's not on the scene, okay. The dad. He said one of their rows was about whether Ed would have his teeth cleaned. So it's very, very odd. He did finally save enough money to move out and go live with a friend, and but he couldn't get away from Clarnell. She was constantly like popping up for surprise visits, and then like he was constantly out of money, so he'd have to go crawling back to her house and stuff like that. And so at that time as well, he was cultivating a very intriguing friendship with a whole bunch of the police officers around town. And he had tried to join the police force, but he was
he
rejected.
Too tall?
I think he may have been too big.
Yeah, I remember reading that as well. I wonder, is that the case?
I would say that was an excuse.
Yeah, probably.
I'd say
Let's
they
be
were
honest,
like,
you're
this
a murderer,
guy.
A double murderer.
They wouldn't have known that.
Of course.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so dark, isn't it?
Yeah, so dark. But anyway, he couldn't be in the police force, but he could try and be friends with them. So he used to hang around in a bar called the Jury Room, and he was later described as a friendly nuisance. Big Ed. They just said, oh, that's Big Ed. We have to tolerate him because he's 6'9".
What's the nuisance element? He was just too much talking
to people? I think he was just trying to be friends.
Oh, I see.
And you know, if someone's trying to be friends with you
melty,
against your will.
The smell of want off them. It's just, it becomes too much.
He probably knew everything about the police force. And
there's being friendly and then there's being eager.
I see.
Fine line.
Okay. Here's a really random one that I never knew. He was engaged.
Oh.
Yes. When he was about 25, he was engaged to a 17-year-old.
Naturally.
She was still in high school at the time. And like, I just can't believe that they were together over a year before
he killed her.
Engagement was broken off by his second arrest.
Thank God.
I
she
never
survived.
Knew this. Yeah. And so basically her name has never been revealed.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah. Oh, because she was underage.
Well, and like protecting her identity, I guess. So that's when he started working for the highway division, and he had an accident at one point riding a motorcycle. After that, he got a car, and the car now would prove to be like, you can only carry so many victims on a motorcycle. You can put more people in a car, unfortunately.
Oh, God.
So he had started noticing that there was like a lot of like young women hitchhiking in the area, mm-hmm. as was totally the norm for the time. And so he started stocking the car with like
sanitary towels,
accessories for
women
doing murders.
Oh no.
Plastic bags, knives.
I was thinking like hair bobbins, Claire's accessories. Become some kind of traveling accessory van
just to lure in the girls. Bobbins.
We all need an extra one. There's never a time that you
never
don't need one.
Have a spare one. So
but it was knives, ropes, bin bags, bleach,
handcuffs. So he picked up the first few without doing anything, and he
dropped them to the location desired, and they left.
Yeah, just totally normal. And he said that he estimates that he picked up about 150 hitchhikers without incident.
Okay.
That he was just, it's like he was just testing the waters.
Building up a reputation as being a good hitchhike picker-upper.
Exactly. Mm. And
for the CB.
He then started to experience homicidal blended with sexual urges.
The worst kind of combination.
Uh-huh. And he called these urges his little zapples.
Zapples is
kind of cute. It's kind of cute. He started getting the little zapples.
It's really creepy.
It's really creepy. And he had this whole kind of, I think, bumbling nice guy persona, perhaps. But like real kind of incel. Like definitely the grandfather of the incel movement.
BFT.
Like, one thing he said was that of the women that he killed, he said they were flaunting in my face the fact that they could do any damn thing they wanted and the society is as screwed up as it is.
What the fuck are you talking about, Ed?
So, what are you talking about, Ed?
Flaunting it, like what? Moving around in the world?
Yeah. Just like
a woman.
Autonomous people. Right. Yeah. So then we have,
where was he? Was shackled by an expunged record.
Yeah.
And a person looking after, I mean, what are we,
yeah, yeah, your mother giving him money.
Yeah.
Like, she gave
asking
him shit
him to
as well,
brush
your
but
teeth. You did kill your grandparents.
Yeah.
So then basically from May 1972 to April 1973, it's only 11 months, Ed packed in 8 murders.
Whoa.
Yeah. He just went on this absolute spree. So he killed 5 college students, 1 high school student, Clarnell got it, and Clarnell's best friend.
Did Clarnell rumble him? And is that why?
How did he get caught?
No. So basically, he picked up female students who were hitchhiking, and then he would take them to like isolated areas. And then he would like shoot or stab or smother or strangle them and just
abandon.
Have his way and then abandon.
Oh, do the business. And
no,
then.
No. He would take their bodies home.
Oh.
And do.
To Clarnell's? Clarnell's got.
Terrible, terrible things. He was living out of home at that point.
Okay.
I'm pretty positive.
Who was the other murderer? So who was living with the granny, had the bodies back at the granny's
house? Jeff Dahmer.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of overlap.
Yeah.
There's a real passion of killing the cats and then killing the grandparents and then killing other people.
Yeah. And the mood getting to live like an extended
so
family.
So watch out
trying
for
to
the
help.
Signs, guys.
You know?
Yeah. If somebody kills their granny, don't go on a date with them.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, I wonder, did that ever come up with his girlfriend that he was engaged to?
I imagine
I
not.
I wouldn't say he brought it up.
Imagine.
A bit of a, yeah.
Yeah.
Relationship killer, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's not great pillow talk.
Yeah. Not ideal. This reminds me of granny. God rest her.
What happened to your granny?
Yeah. Had to bludgeon her to death.
He said in interviews, again, passing the book, that he'd often go searching for victims after an argument with his mother. So she worked at the university at that point in town, and she refused to introduce him to any women attending the university. Again, I think probably because she knew he was a murderer.
Mm-hmm.
And she would say, "You're just like your father. You don't deserve to get to know them." That this is what he says, she said. I imagine it was way more along the lines of, "What about Granny and Granddad?"
Exactly.
Yeah, he started killing these poor young women, and like they're just horrible, horrible deaths. Like, because he'd kind of put one of them in the back of the car, so she'd be like hemmed in, you know, those kind of cars where you can't get out but through the front. And then he'd have the one in the passenger seat.
Oh, he'd be picking up two people at the same time.
He picked up two sets of two and two solos.
My God.
And he like would start heading where they wanted to go. And then he'd just start like drifting into another direction.
Oh my God, so scary.
And just so, so scary.
Didn't he have the pass on his car, like his mother's college staff badge?
Yeah, so that he could kind of go through the university and like unremarked upon.
And if you were getting into
his car, yeah,
you might be like, "Oh, this is a person
somebody
who
works
at least
in the college."
Exactly.
Yeah,
he's connected to somewhere I know.
So his third and fourth victims, or the first two of this killing spree, were Marianne Paschi and Anita Lucchesa. And basically, I mean, he did all the killings out in an isolated place, and then he put their bodies in the trunk of his car and went back to his apartment. But on the way to the apartment was stopped by a police officer.
Oh my God.
Because one of his back lights, his brake lights, were not working.
With two bodies in the boot.
Yeah. And so the police officer didn't remotely detect that there was bodies in the boot.
He was cool as a cucumber.
Big affable Ed.
Did they know him? Probably.
Mm. From the jury room.
Yeah.
And so
the bar.
Ed's her roommate wasn't at home, so he took the bodies into his apartment, and then he absolutely had his way. Like photographing them, necrophilia, dismemberment.
Oh my God.
Everything.
Like everything. Decapitated them. He seemed to have done that thing the neck that you can imagine.
He did the neck thing.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Oh my God. And he basically bagged up their remains and kind of scattered them and stuff like that. And so then, like, a few months later, he picked up Aiko Ku, who was a 15-year-old dance student.
Mm-hmm.
And she was hitchhiking to class because she'd missed her bus. And he, like, imagine, she's so young. She's 15. And he was driving her to this remote area, and then he pulled a gun on her. And then, bumbling, lumbering around, and he accidentally locked himself out of his own car with her inside. And the gun was in the car
inside
with her. But
she couldn't get it.
She let him back in.
Yeah.
Well, I'd say he just
look
fucking scared.
Yeah.
Talk to her.
Like, he was
going
to break the window to get in anyway. It wasn't
exactly
like,
it
and
wasn't,
the chance of her being able to fumble around with the gun and get it firing in the right direction very small as well.
Yeah, yeah.
She had no hope.
And so she went into the boot of the car as well, and then like he headed
same
back
again.
Home. On his way home, stopped for a few drinks, and then after he left the bar, he went out to his car in the car park, opened the boot just to have a little look at his
stash,
his catch, and then brought her back to the apartment, did all the same things again. They mounted a huge search for her, but no responses on the search. Then it was a few months later, again in January of the next year, that he'd moved back in with his mother at this point, when he picked up an 18-year-old called Cynthia Ann Schall, and he took her to the remote place and he shot her, and then he placed her in the boot of the car as always, and then he drove back to his mum's house and he put her in a wardrobe in his room overnight until his mum had gone out for work the next morning. Like, just
wild.
Imagine bringing
a corpse from a car into a house that your mother is in.
Well, he did that intentionally, obviously, because
he's probably stopped caring.
Yeah, and he did all of the like all the usual stuff in the mother's bathtub, and then apparently kept Shaw's head for several days, and then buried it in the garden, facing his mother's bedroom window.
Fucking hell! He's a weird man, isn't he?
A very weird man. He had a little joke about that later after his arrest, saying Clarnell always wanted people to look up to her. So then the following month, so like he's absolutely fucking rampaging at this point.
And is there a manhunt?
Well, there's all these different disappearances. So we've had four in the space of like 9 months.
And no bodies.
No bodies. Yeah, exactly. And so he in February picked up Rosalind Thorpe and Alison Liu, and again, like, remote area, killed them, brought them back to the mom's house. This is mad. He beheaded them in the car.
Oh my God.
And then carried the headless corpses into the house.
What? How was all of this with no witnesses?
I know. And then he did the same. He discarded their remains in like remote locations. He took care to remove the bullets so that they couldn't be traced back to him.
Sure, he was studied it at this point.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Years of planning, knowledge about the police force.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And so that was finally when he kind of came to the end of the road. And they always said that he had always been wanting to kill Clarnell, and that like all of these poor women were like collateral damage on his journey to like getting to the source, kind of. And so basically it was in April of 1973, and Clarnell was like just back from a party, sitting up in her bed reading a book, and Ed came into her room. And Clarnell goes, I suppose you're going to want to sit up all night and talk now. And Ed said, no, good night. And then he waited for her to fall asleep. And then he just, bludgeoned her with a hammer and slit her throat.
Oh my God.
And did all of the stuff that he always does with his mother's corpse.
Fucking hell.
And he also said later that he put her head on a shelf and just screamed at it for an hour.
What a fucking loser.
Fucking
grow
hell.
Up.
Fucking hell. And so then he put the mother in a closet and went for a drink. And then, this is so baffling, when he got home, he invited his mother's best friend, Sarah, over to have dinner and watch a movie. And then when she arrived, he killed her. And he said later it was so that there'd be a cover story that he could say his mom and Sarah had gone on vacation together.
Oh,
and then he put Sarah in the cupboard as well. And then he left a note that said approximately 5:15 a.m. Saturday. No need for her to suffer any more at the hands of this horrible, murderous butcher. It was quick. Asleep the way I wanted it, not sloppy and incomplete, gents. Just a lack of time. I got things to do! ! So then he fled and drove to Colorado, which is a journey that is 1,600 kilometers. He had 3 guns and rounds of ammunition, and he thought he was about to become the target of like a massive scale manhunt. So he was keeping an ear out on the radio to see if there had been any news about the murders of Clarnell and Sarah. And then there was nothing. So he found a phone booth and called the police and confessed. But the police were like, oh, Ed, and didn't take it seriously.
Oh my God.
And then told him to call back later.
Fucking hell.
So later, Ed called back and asked to speak to a police officer that he knew personally, presumably from the old jury room. And he told that police officer that he'd killed Clarnell and Sarah, And then he waited for police to arrive and take him into custody. And it was when he was taken into custody that he confessed to the murder of the six other young women. And when he was asked why he turned himself in, he said that the original purpose was gone. It wasn't serving any physical or real or emotional purpose. It was just a pure waste of time. Emotionally, I couldn't handle it much longer. Towards the end there, I started feeling the folly of the whole damn thing. And at the point of near exhaustion, near collapse, I just said to hell with it and called it all off. He was just exhausted.
You would be.
He was exhausted.
What a fucking...
So what did he... He got life in prison, presumably.
So yeah, indicted on 8 counts of first degree murder. I mean, he confessed. His lawyer said, you've got to plead not guilty by reason of insanity. And he tried to commit suicide twice while he was in custody. That didn't pan out for him. And the psychiatrist appointed by the court said, this guy's sane. He's not insane at all. And so...
What a dangerous...
They also said that he had engaged in cannibalism. But it seems like this might be the one thing
he didn't
get up to. They, like, people reported that, like, he loved the infamy. And, you know, that might have been to do with why he said that he had engaged in cannibalism, just to, like,
just to
trump it up
a
bit more. He actually took the stand in his own trial, and he said that he had wanted to kill these victims so that he could keep them forever, basically, like possessions. He himself asked for the death penalty and requested for death by torture. But there
Can
was a
you
moratorium.
Request
I know, I've never heard of anything like it. There was a moratorium placed on capital punishment by the Supreme Court of California at the time. So he received life for each count, and he was imprisoned. And I think when he was in prison, he kind of got friendly with our old friend Ted Kaczynski.
Oh.
Or is it Kaczynski? There was, obviously, he narrated audiobooks for a charity program.
How was that allowed to happen?
Apparently narrated over 5,000 hours of audiobooks. And like, I think some of it was like Dickens and stuff like that.
Bizarre.
He was
keeping him busy.
Kept in the same prison as Charles Manson and Herbert Mullen, who had also been killing in the Santa Cruz area. And he's kind of a random one, actually. He killed 13 people, saying that he was killing them to prevent this like catastrophic earthquake from taking place. So like a bit of a supernatural sort of motive, you know, there. But we don't know that he didn't prevent some terrible earthquake. But sadly, 13 innocent people died. But Ed, not a fan of Herb's, didn't like him.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I would say didn't like him just because he was operating around the same time, killed in the same
people.
Area. Yeah.
Hard not to compare.
Just exactly. But he also was very disdainful of Herb for being 5'9".
Oh.
A foot shorter than him. And he described Herb as just a cold-blooded killer.
Oh.
Killing everybody he saw for no good reason. Says Ed.
Versus Ed. Did any remorse here at all?
Any remorse?
No, I'd imagine.
No, like all the interviews and stuff like that. He just has like got this really flat delivery of like very matter of fact.
What happened?
Just very. And like sometimes he pulls out these weird little details as if they in some way like excuse him or like paint him in a better light.
Like
he said at one point.
With his mother.
Yeah. Or like he said at one point with during one of the killings, he like accidentally grazed one of the women's breasts and said like, oh, excuse me. Like as if he was like, sorry for the violation.
And then I'll kill
then
you.
He proceeded to kill and
violate.
So yeah, it's he also was involved with the forming of the criminal behavioral arm of the FBI.
Yeah,
Mindhunter on Netflix has them interviewing him there. Don't know where they got that actor.
Amazing.
He was an amazing actor. Very, very tall. And yeah, so he went for parole, like through the 80s, 90s, 2000s, denied parole. They said he'd been a model prisoner, but because of the enormity of his crimes. And then he denied in 2017. And he's next up for parole next year.
2023. Yeah. I mean, so there's a chance he could be out.
No, he'll hardly get it.
I just surely not.
If they're going to parole board him, there's got to be a potential. Why would they bother? They have to, and they just,
it's yeah, a, it's a formality.
Jesus, that's
thank
scary.
You, Sophie. That was
epic,
absolutely epic. Thank you.
I feel like we've told a bit of him throughout the years.
Yeah,
never the full.
We've brushed up against it.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's been frittage.
I mean, if anyone wants to be more horrified and disturbed,
the interviews.
There is more details, but
I think there was an appropriate amount of horrifying and disturbing.
I feel like
so much of it is just so.
He's
the
a true.
I don't know why, of all of the images in the whole story, it's the pulling the headless corpses out of a car on like a residential street and bringing them into an apartment.
Batshit.
Mental.
Thank you all.
We
come
love
see us on the Hive.
Consider becoming a patron. Patreon.com/thecreepdive.
And you we'll get see first. Our live shows.
Yes.
See us at the live shows. You get first dibs on the live shows. There's hours of more of this type of thing. Should you wish, dip your toe, see if you like it.
Dip your gout. All right, thanks.
Bye. Bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.